This lesson is entitled Developing Dynamic Ministry to Young Singles with Carrie Schmidt. Brother Schmidt is the Student Ministries Director at Lancaster Baptist Church, where he has served as an associate pastor for 20 years. This lesson is a part of Spiritual Leadership Conference 2011, hosted by Pastor Paul Chappell and the Lancaster Baptist Church.
We'll jump into it. We'll talk about ministering to singles. Pray that this will be a blessing. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for the day, for the week, for all that you've done in our hearts. We just praise you for it. Thank you for bringing us together. The fellowship's been wonderful. And I pray that you bless our time now in Jesus' name. Amen. I want to encourage you to write a few statistics down just to kind of set a context. Some of you may have read these recently. In fact, if you just Google the 2010 census, you'll come across this stuff in New York Times and major news outlets. But last year's census, for the first time ever, married couples are the minority in America. They are 48% of U.S. households. I want to try to give you a context for the significance of, I mean, if you don't have something for singles in your church, you just cut off like half of the population group from being reachable, you know. And that's just unthinkable when you consider it's just staggering to think that. Now, that number, by the way, in 1950, 78% of U.S. households were married couples. That's staggering to think we've lost 30%, you know, in the last 60 years. Here's another one, and this is scary. 20% of U.S. households are traditional families, mom and dad with children. 20%. That's one-fifth of U.S. households are what we consider a biblical model for family life, mom and dad and kids. And 80%, the other 80% either make up blended families of some kind, you know, step-parent, foster parent, aunt, uncle, you know, raising someone else's child, or singles, single parents, things like that. Single moms. In the last 10 years, households led by single women has jumped 18%. That's just since the year 2000. So the single population of our country, I wish those statistics were not what they are. I mean, I think the family is losing ground, and I think the disintegration of marriages in the home is tragic. But we can't ignore the fact that the people we're trying to reach, 52% of them, are single households, okay, and representing single adults. Now, what I want to focus on in this session is, and we titled this Young Singles, so I'm focusing on the 18 to 30 age group, okay, and we'll touch a little bit. I'll tell you what we are doing for the 30 and the 40-something age group, because those are a huge part of that number of single households. But we definitely, and going back 12, 14 years, as our church grew, we definitely began to break down those age groups. Early on, and some of you may be in this model, in this mode, but I mean, when you graduated from our youth group, you went into the singles ministry, and it was open-ended. So suddenly, you were a senior higher going to senior high camp and senior high winter retreat. Now suddenly you're a 19-year-old single, and you're in a room at a retreat with 48-year-old divorcees who are playing Scrabble. And everyone in between, suddenly you were just thrust into this very broad open group, singles, you know. And we realized early on that doesn't work. And especially, you can't use this excuse, well, we don't have enough to break it down. I mean, if I had 3 40-something people and 4 30-something people and 5, you know, 20-something people, I would somehow try to break that down, because their life stages are very, very different. And part of it is we don't want a 45-year-old divorced man to be socially, you know, relating and connecting with a 19-year-old Christian school graduate. You know, that's not the same people group. And so we really did begin to strategize, how do we break this down? The single mom statistic, Pastor Chappell started sensing a need for that, I want to say about 15 years ago. We started the first ladies class, and it was for single, it was basically households led by single women or women whose husbands would not come to church. And what that class went from zero to like 80 ladies overnight. I mean, just in a few months, boom. And so we broke down and started more classes. And I want to say we have three or four ladies classes now that are single moms and divorced ladies and some of the older, the widows and things like that. But anyway, let me before I jump into the young singles, let me just tell you, we have essentially three, maybe four singles departments, and I want to talk to you about our structure, and this may or may not work for you. I just want to give you one model and how we've broken it down. We created what we called college and career, and in a lot of churches, that is the singles department. We separated singles from college and career, okay? We wanted to create an 18 to 22, 23-year-old people group in this church that we valued and esteemed and nurtured and discipled as much as or more than we even did the senior high. And so we have junior high, we have senior high, and then we added to that college and career. And that college and career group, we used that name 20 years ago, and then it became the singles department. And so this college and career name went unused. And when we tried to figure out what do we name this post-high school 18 to 22 group, do we call it a college group? That would have worked, except for some of our kids didn't go to college. And I didn't want them to feel, oh, well, that's not my group because I'm not in college. And so we came back to that college and career term, because if a kid decided he was not in college for a year and he was working at a bank or at a, you know, gas station or something, okay, he's developing his career, you know. So we called this college and career, 18 to 22, 23. We give them the option of when to promote on the high end. They don't have to promote out until they are ready. And some of them are in college for 4 or 5 or 6 years, and so if they want to stay in that group, we kind of open that up to them. When they promote out of college and career, they would go into what we call Single Life 1. Single Life 1 is 22 to 30. And now, the older somebody gets in our ministry, the less we cram this down their throat in terms of, you know, if you're in kindergarten, you're going to promote to first grade. You don't have a choice, okay? If you're in ninth grade, you're going to promote to 10th grade. You don't have a choice. If you're in college or career and you're 21, I really want you to go to the college and career department. But if you opt to go to the 24-year-old singles, 22 to 30 singles class, I'm not going to yell and scream at you. I'm just glad you're going to be in Sunday school class, you know. And then beyond that, you know, if somebody's 31 and they're still really connected with friends that are 29 and 30 in that earlier class, Single Life 1, we're not going to go to them and go, all right, you got to promote, you know. Now, it's loosely enforced. You know, if they're there 3 and 4 more years, eventually the teacher would say, hey, you really ought to promote into that next singles group. A lot of times the reason when they're on the border of that age group, the reason they want to stay is because they got friends in that class, you know. Or they look at the next class and everybody's 35 or 37 or up in the upper 30s and they are only 30. They don't feel like they fit there. So we're not Gestapo about when they promote. Single Life 1 is 22 to 30, and we have 3 Single Life 1 classes right now that they can choose from. 2 at 1 hour and 1 at another hour. Our largest of those classes, people migrate to by who reaches them and who decide, you know, what teacher they connect with relationally, where their friends go, that kind of thing. We have one class that bounces between 60 and 70 in attendance. We have another same hour that bounces around 30 or 40 in attendance. And then the other hour, same age group, it's a newer class, and they probably have 20 or 25 in that class. Once you hit 30, there's a 30 to 40 age group that we call single life two. And that is pretty much one class at this point. And Mike Lester teaches that class, he and his wife. And then beyond 40, and we have some 44 and 43-year-olds that still go to that 30 to 40 class, and we're good with that. Beyond 40, we have a couple of singles classes that a lot of those folks are past broken relationships, and God, you know, they're starting over, and God's putting their life back together. And there's the single ladies classes would fit mostly in that 30s, 40s, some 50s age groups. Brother MacArthur, Tim Christensen's father-in-law, teaches an older singles class. Brother Danny Coates on our staff teaches a 40 and 50-year-old men's class. And so we've tried to take all those age groups and address them and structure a singles ministry to all of them. Now, what I want to do is zero in on this 18, this post-high school zone, 18 to 30, let's say, okay? And I'll call them young singles. And I want to challenge you to really develop a passion and a program and a heart and a ministry for this age group. A lot, I think, historically, this age group is one of the weakest links in independent Baptist churches. And I think somewhere along the way, and I don't know when it happened because I'm fairly young and I don't understand all the progression of this, but somewhere along the way, we really focused on youth ministry. We had, you know, growing dynamic youth ministries. And then we got this idea that everybody should go to Bible college. And wouldn't that be wonderful, you know, if everybody just went to Bible college, if it was that neatly divided and sliced and diced, and if we could go, yes, it's God's will for everybody to go to Bible college, and if you don't, then you're not right with God, and we don't care about you anyway. That's not what we say, but if we don't have something for this age group, that's basically what we're saying, you know. In a lot of independent Baptist churches, the 18 to 23-year-olds, we get mad at them because they fall away. But our only options are basically, you know, three options. You either go to Bible college, or you become a bus worker, or you're a loser. And I mean, that's just wrong. Question.
I've got to ask since you're this close to the air base, and I am too in Phoenix. Do you get young airmen?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mostly, they. Sometimes they come to college and career. Sometimes they opt for that 20-something singles group because that's kind of their people group on base and stuff like that. But yes, yeah. Here's what's odd about that thinking of, well, you didn't go to Bible college. Let me give you a quick story. I talked to a young man who's one of the sharpest young men, honestly, that I've ever met. He recently moved to our ministry. He came from a church that the mentality is, if you don't go to Bible college, you're a loser. To the degree that, now hear me on this. This young man grew up in a church. I mean, friends, Christian school, teen soul winning. This is his friends. This is his church family. When he decided it was God's will for him to pursue law, and his friends went to Bible college, the church that he was a member of would no longer let him go soul winning with the Bible college students. Now just stop and think about that for a minute. Suddenly this kid who's grown up in this church, you know, you are our church family. You're not allowed to go soul winning with your friends now. I mean, he told me this and I said, are you serious? He said, I was not allowed to go soul winning with my best friend from high school because he went to Bible college and I didn't. And I looked, and I was with our college and career, one of our college career teachers at the time. We were having dinner. This was 2 weeks ago. And I looked at Jeremy. I said, "That is just wrong. That's not. I mean, that is absolutely wicked in my mind. I mean, to think that this young man, who loves God, who's lived for God, who's grown up in this church, and who is pursuing God's will for his life, would be written off to that degree." And basically prohibited from mingling with a student that's in Bible college. Just that just is unthinkable to me. But it's revealing of how we can get skewed in our mind, and become so unbiblical in the way we treat a person who's simply doing what God is leading that person to do. Can I tell you, some of the greatest church members we have are people who grew up here, didn't go to Bible college, but they stayed faithful to God, and now they have families in this church. Some of them are deacons. Many of them are our best youth workers. They didn't go to Bible college. They didn't feel called. Hey, one of our best men in our youth ministry right now, he and his wife, he went to 2 years of Bible college here. Graduated from high school, 1 year of Bible college, decided to go a second year. His second year, he came to me for counsel and sat down in my office. He said, "Brother Schmidt, I've gone to 2 years of Bible college." He may have even gone to three. And he said, "I really don't feel that God is calling me into the ministry. And I feel like I want to pursue a career in law enforcement. What should I do?" Now, if you're stuck in this, in my opinion, unbiblical mentality that you have to go to Bible college or you are not right with God, you lose that guy and his family, and they go down to wherever accepts them, okay? I sat there and said, if it's not God's will for you to go into ministry, and if it's God's will for you to become a sheriff, then you should become a sheriff. Now, in some kind of warped world, you know, that hurts our Bible college enrollment. So what? I'm not trying to build our Bible college enrollment. I'm trying to help this guy find God's will for his life. And as best I could determine, he wasn't rebelling against God. He wasn't running from anything. He's just honestly saying, I've done this, I've sought the Lord, and here's what God's leading me to do. Great. Let me ask you guys a question. If you were out door knocking and you knocked on the door of a 25-year-old sheriff's deputy and you led him to Christ, would you let him come to your church? Hello? You know, why would I outcast this young man because he's going to come from Bible college to sheriff's department? You know, and I said, here's what I said to him. I said, are you sure? I proved him. Are you sure? And how have you gone about this? And, you know, went down the line. I couldn't find a hole. I couldn't poke a hole in his reasoning or in his way of arriving at his decision. So I said, you know what? You need to obey God. You need to go do the Sheriff's Academy. So that was 4 or 5 years ago. He's married a young lady that grew up in our youth group. He sits on the front row right over by the baptistry every single service. 2-3 years ago, he was out of the academy starting to become a sheriff. I approached him. I said, hey, I'd really like you guys to become youth workers. And he and his wife came up and sat down. And I went through what it takes to be a youth worker, soul winning and standards and lifestyle, and you're going to be an example to teens. And I looked at him as genuinely as I could. I said, now listen, his name's Justin. I said, Justin, if you're not ready for this, I'm okay with that. I said, if you and your wife are still, you know, if you go to a movie every now and then, or you're not every week soul winning, and you're not ready to make that commitment, you know what? I still love you, and you're still an important part of this church, and we still are friends. So if you're not ready to be a youth worker, take time. Grow, love God, stay here, keep your family here. And he said, well, let us pray about it. And a few days later, he came back. He said, Brother Schmidt, he didn't tell me why. He said, Brother Schmidt, we're not going to do that just yet. We're not quite ready. Because I put on him, you're really going to be an example. Teens are going to follow you. They're going to watch you. They're going to study you. You got to be an example. He said, we're not quite ready. I said, great. When you change your mind, you let me know, and we're ready. We want you, you know. A year later, about a year ago now, he came to me and said, we want to be youth workers. And now every week, Sunday school, they're helping in a class. They're visiting kids. They're loving kids. They are growing their family for God, and you couldn't ask for better church members. And at any point along the way, if we had got out of whack in our thinking about this single age group, we'd have lost him. And that's a success story of the foundation of what I'm going to tell you. That's the fruit of what we're trying to accomplish. I want to first encourage you, this is by way of introduction, understand the progression. And I'm going to give you a progression that you've seen, I'm sure, in your own church, and I've seen it in our church many times. This is why we're trying to address this. The progression away from God for high school graduates often takes on these 8 steps. Number one, culture teaches them not to grow up. And these are not on the screen. They live in a culture that's trying to get them to stay young and immature and avoid responsibility, and I wrote about that in LifeQuest. Culture's saying, don't grow up, don't be mature, don't marry, don't start a family, just live around, have sex, get a job that you can make enough money to put gas in your car and buy an iPod. live off your parents, you know, all that. Number two, some church ministries, youth ministries, have indirectly taught that God really isn't fun. I'm talking about independent Baptist church youth ministries, and I'll define that for you in a minute. I think sometimes we get our mentality wrong in our 7th through 12th grade ministry. And we focus on fun and sarcasm and hilarity and silliness. I'm not saying don't have fun. I'm not saying don't goof around with your kids. I'm saying that that becomes dominant. You know, youth ministry is about fun. And a lot of youth pastors are immature, and they're just kind of in that, you know, let's just go goof around mentality. And so all through junior and high school, these kids have been given the idea that the Bible and God are kind of boring, so we have to come up with silliness to entertain you to try to get you to come to church and like it. You follow what I'm saying? I mean, you're not going to like the Bible lesson. You're not going to like living for God, but you like playing with water balloons and shaving cream and playing stupid games. So we'll do a lot of that because that's what's fun. And so the kids get this idea that church is stupidity. And trust me, we've done plenty of stupid things with our teenagers, and we've had a lot of fun with our teens, and we always do. But our kids, I think if you pulled any of our kids aside, they would be able to clearly identify to you that the focus of our youth ministry is building their lives for God. And I'm not in any way trying to compensate for the boring nature of God in my youth program, okay? But I think sometimes that's kind of our approach. So indirectly, the message is the kids walk away from the youth group with God is juvenile. God, you know, God isn't enough, so we have to dress him up in entertainment. And I think that's a bad seed to sow. And so they, by the time they're 19 and 20, here's what they have in their mind. Youth group and God and Bible and church was kind of juvenile. And real world, real life, real work, real single 20-something, that's what's so attractive. And that's what, you know. And so they're already kind of set up for outgrowing God. You know, that was juvenile, and I kind of outgrew that, okay? Number three. Many churches offer little or no focused, age-specific spiritual support for someone after high school. Many churches offer little or no focused, age-specific spiritual support for someone after high school. So we haven't really thought through and structured something for them to draw them and hook them and make them a part of this church family and value them. And I'm predominantly talking about our non-Bible college students, by the way, okay? And most of you don't have a college at your church, so your Bible college students are going away, and you're left with a handful of students that didn't go to Bible college. That's who I'm talking about, okay? Those kids have got to have, you've got to wrap your arm around them just like you did 7th and 8th graders in junior high. And just because you're 19 and work at Subway doesn't mean you're, and didn't go to Bible college, you are no less valuable, you're no less important to the cause of Christ, and you're not out of the will of God because you didn't go to Bible college. Sometimes they are, I understand that, but not all the time. And by the way, even if they are, it doesn't mean I should castigate them. I should still love them and try to keep them faithful to God and pray that they'll get into the will of God, okay? So that's the people group I'm talking about. Number four, graduates who don't go to Bible college get, now think about this, they get jobs and they start going to local colleges. And they often start working on Sundays. So, Paul, let me borrow you for a minute. Connor and Tyler. I knew it was Tyler. I was going to say Trevor, but I knew I was wrong. Tyler, you come up here for a minute. Let me borrow these guys. Okay, Brother Connor, Tyler, you come over here. And Tyler, you work at Taco Bell. You are unsaved. You grew up in East Lancaster, you go to AV College, and you are making tacos for a living, okay? Paul Connor is my buddy since nursery, man. We've been biting each other's ears in the nursery when we were two, you know. And we grew up in this church, and we grew up in the youth group, and we grew up in Christian school, and we went soul winning together. And he's my buddy, okay, and he's my friend. Now, it's irrelevant for this illustration whether he went to Bible college or whether he stayed local. A lot of our kids stay here and go to Bible college, so they still live in town, and they're still a part of this group that I'm talking about. I teach our seniors what I'm about to tell you right now, our high school graduates as they're coming out of high school. This is what happens. They've grown up, and you can multiply this guy by 3 or 4 or 10 or whatever. This is their people group, their whole life, local church. These are my buddies. This is who I'm close to. This is who I know. This is who I see every Sunday. I see every day if I go to Christian school. I see them at youth activities. These are my people. Okay, I graduate from high school. I don't see this guy 5 days a week now. I'm only going to see him Sunday and maybe Wednesdays. So there's already a little bit less of a connection. And this summer I get a job at Taco Bell. And I meet Tyler. And unfortunately, I teach them, this is a person I should be influencing, not be influenced by. This is a person, he's a good man, he's a good Christian, let's say. This is a person I can be influenced by. My fellowship can be with him. This is not a close friend. This is somebody I'm trying to reach. But that's not how most 18-year-olds see it. Okay, this becomes their new day. Their new Monday through Friday is making tacos with this guy. And never fails the very first huge test of a high school graduate's faith. They go get their first job. They're all enamored with the phrase, I gotta work. You know, they got a paycheck now. They got a job now. They feel like they're in the adult world. And even if they are all spiritual about it and go in and say, I can't work on Sundays, and the manager says, okay, we'll hire you anyway, what's the first thing that's going to happen? They're going to get scheduled for a Sunday. I take 2 weeks in their senior year and teach them about the principle of working, not working on Sundays. And I walk them through this. I tell them, even if you tell the manager, I can't work on Sundays, the manager says, great, we won't schedule you on Sunday. First schedule out of the gate, you're going to be listed on Sunday. Well, now they feel this obligation. You know, 99 out of 100 times, all it is that the guy that hired them didn't tell the guy that made the schedule, don't schedule on Sundays. And 99 out of 100 times, if the teenager went and said, I can't work on Sundays, I won't work on Sundays, and you told me that was okay, but you scheduled me anyway, 99 managers out of 100 would go, oh, okay, no, I'm sorry, that was a miscue, we'll change it. But the kids don't know that. And they have this obligation, so they give in. Oh, well, bummer. And they work on Sunday. Okay, so now I've missed the one day a week I was going to connect with this guy. And I'm back here with Tyler making tacos. Tyler parties, does drugs, has sex. He's living the life of secular college America, single. And I'm getting that now 5-6 days a week and missing Sunday. So this is my new church. This is my new youth group. And unfortunately, I'm not strong enough to stand against that, and I need a people group socially. That's my desire. I want to be accepted. I want to be welcomed in. So at first, I'm just going to laugh at his jokes, and I'm not going to go to his parties. But then I'm eventually going to go to his parties, and I'm going to be drug away because I'm working Sundays. I'm missing. Here's the way this side works. The one Sunday I don't get scheduled, I show back up at church. He's got 2 or 3 friends that he's buddy-buddy talking with, that they're still faithful. I haven't been here for 3 weeks, so now I automatically feel weird. And now I go, oh, these guys probably don't like me anymore. It's nothing that he did. It's just built into the dynamic. It's the way the devil messes with my mind. Oh, I probably don't. This guy's looking at me going, he hasn't been here in 3 weeks, and now he's not even talking to me. He probably doesn't even want to talk to me anymore. He's not intentionally rejecting this guy. This guy's not intentionally rejecting him. There's just this awkward distance socially that's happened. And now this guy feels much more comfortable with Tyler at Taco Bell because he's making tacos all day long with this guy. And he feels really outcast from his group. This group has got to really work to keep this guy connected, feeling like he's not outcast. A lot of dynamic has just played out in this illustration, I'm telling you. This is what happens to our kids. There's a lot of prevention that needs to go into this. We need to help them understand this process and be warned about it and barricaded against it. We need to help them understand how to come to Taco Bell and influence this guy without being obligated to him and feeling his acceptance. Okay, we need to help this guy understand not to work on Sundays. I tell him, in the 1% of the case where the manager says, look, you either work on Sundays or you lose your job. Lose the job. Even in 10% unemployment conditions, Taco Bell jobs are not that difficult to find, especially if you're hardworking and honest and clean cut. Not tattooed and stuff sticking out of your head everywhere. Piercings and stuff. You know, when a manager sees a clean cut kid that wants to be honest and give him a hard day's work, it's not hard to say, we won't schedule you on Sundays. I tell our kids, everybody else in the world will work on Sundays. They don't. It's not hard to find somebody that works on Sundays. You stand your ground. And I've never seen God fail those kids who will stand their ground. God always gives them a better job. God always opens a door for them. Okay, you guys can be seated. Thank you for your help. But that's the slide, the natural progression that happens when these kids start getting their secular jobs and attending their secular college. They start to feel a natural distance, especially if they work on Sundays. Okay. Number five, at their jobs and colleges, our graduates face every kind of temptation and wrong friendships. And you could add to that list ridicule and scorn and mockery. And it is shocking to them. I do not buy into this, well, if you grew up in a Christian school or a homeschool or a church, you're so far behind in life. No, they're not behind. But there is a little culture shock that comes to their first job at JCPenney's. When everybody they're working with is sleeping around and partying and doing all kinds of trash and talking about it freely, there's a little bit of, whoa, it's like cold water in the face. Had a young lady about a year or so out of high school come to me a few years ago, and she was just distraught. And I said, you know, how can I help you? She's crying. She said, I'm selling shoes at Penny's, and I'm working. And this girl is just relentless. She's mocking me, and she's making fun of me, and she's calling me names. She's ridiculing me and despising me and making me feel so terrible for being a Christian. And I said, well, tell me about her. She's a mess. Her life is so wrecked. She does drugs, and she goes to parties, and she has she's pregnant. She doesn't even have a boyfriend, you know. And I said, now, this girl's name was Jessica, and I said, Jessica, now stop and think about it. I said, this girl that's teasing you is a total loser, and you are a total winner, and she can't handle that. I said, she looks at you, and you're beautiful, and you're clean cut, and you're living right, and you're not pregnant, and you're not doing drugs, and you have a happy family, and you have people that love you, and she is destitute and miserable in her sin and forsaken and looking for love, and she hates her life, and you love yours, and so she hates you because of that. And I said, you just endure it and love that lady, and you may get to win her to Christ in a few months. She will eventually come back to you and apologize. But I'm telling you, that first experience of being ridiculed and mocked, it really set her back on her heels, like, whoa. It's not that she was doubting her faith or anything like that. It was just emotional. It was hard for her to deal with. So they really do face that. Number six, these new and appealing connections and relationships draw them away from those boring spiritual things. These new friends and new experiences and relationships and a church where they now have little connection. And boy, this is even exaggerated if most of your kids are going to Bible college. You know, if you're graduating 10 seniors and 8 of them are going to Bible college, you got 2 seniors who you're going to lose if you don't make this, fighting this progression a priority in their lives. Number 7, the allure of the world, a paycheck, and a new level of adulthood promises them freedom and pleasure and fun. The allure of the world, a paycheck, and a new level of adulthood promises so much to them. Number 8, the process ultimately leads to disappointment and spiritual devastation. So ultimately the process lets them down. You know, by the time they're 27, 28, they know they've blown it. I want to see if I can find this text really quick. I have a text on my phone from a young man who got away from God after he graduated. He and I have always been good friends, and I love him. I got this text about a week ago, And he says, "Hey, man, it's," and he tells me his name. This was 9 o'clock on a Wednesday night. "I'm sorry to text you so late, but I'd appreciate it if you could meet with me maybe sometime in the next week or two, whenever, if ever, you're not too busy. If not, I totally understand why." Because he didn't just leave. He kind of left with a hateful attitude towards us. "Just let me know. Thanks." I said, "Sure, what about?" He said, "I've come," now this is 5-6 years after high school. "I've come," maybe 7, "I've come to some embarrassing and shameful conclusions about the direction I'm leading my family." He's married now. "And I really need to turn back to God, and I'm not sure how to start. Nobody knows, but I've been suffering from depression. It's taken me getting to the point where I've considered doing unmentionable things, and I'm scared and realizing that my way isn't working, and I don't know where else to turn. I said, I'll be happy to help. I've always been your friend. My schedule's whacked out with cancer treatments, so be patient." And he said, "That sounds awesome. I'll look forward to it. Take as much time as you need. Good luck with treatments. We'll be praying for you. Thanks for answering." Those are parents that have had broken hearts for 5 years. You know, those are parents that probably considered, you know, do we fit in around here? And everybody's kids are doing well. And look at all, you know, the embarrassment, all of it. Well, now he's going to come back, you know. And he might be in a couples class a year from now. We might see his kids coming into the youth group 13 years from now and going to Bible college. I mean, there's a long, long battle here that we're going to fight, okay? Now, two big points, and we're going to break them down. Number one, and you go, "Brother Schmidt, you only got 15 minutes. All right. Number one, offer spiritual, relational support after high school. This is a huge principle. How you make it look in your ministry is really between you and the pastor and God. And I'll talk a little bit about how we make ours look, but this is the point. This is what we're trying to give. I want to stand by you spiritually, relationally, while you're 18 to 25, 18 to 30. We want to be behind you. We want to love you. We want to disciple you and nurture you. By the way, 18 to 23, this is the hardest group to get to church. Just read anybody's statistic. It's the hardest group to keep and to get them into church, okay? So the people that work in this ministry need to know you are on the front lines of the hardest age group in the world, okay? Everybody younger than them is relatively easy to work with. People older than them are relatively easy to work with. This is the hardest group, 18 to 23, okay? A few thoughts. I already described how we established an 18 to 23-year-old department. We called it College and Career. This department is led by teachers and leaders who are primarily of secular employment, okay? In other words, I don't want, now this isn't a hard and fast rule because we've had some of our Bible college staff and faculty that worked in the college and career department, but that I don't want our Bible college staff staffing our church college and career department because then all they think is they're trying to get me into Bible college. You know, I want teachers and sheriff's deputies and housewives and nurses staffing this college and career department. I want people who went to secular college and graduated with their faith intact in this department, okay? I want the people who sat through science classes and had teachers mock their faith and teach evolution, and I want adults who turned down the friends with benefits, sexual revolution, and who lived for God through secular university and secular colleges, and we have those people in our church. And so we staff this with people who can support this life group, this age group, okay? This group, I will say, too, is significantly different than a high school youth group, okay? It's not just this mirror image of your senior high. We'll take our senior hires to teenagers have money. College students have none, okay? And we'll talk some more about these differences. Next thought I have under this relational spiritual support, love them through the test of their faith. And this is what I mean. Almost every young person experiences tests and trials during this time of life. And they struggle with faithfulness to church. They struggle with what they believe and why they believe it. And it is tested. And sometimes they fall away for a year or two. But if you will come into it understanding that and loving them through that, you will keep more than you realize. And you'll lose some, but you'll lose them for a shorter time than you might think. And just because they stopped coming to church doesn't mean they're not going to come back or that they wouldn't come back at some point. So love them through that. Stand with them. Pray for them. Encourage them. And just to get it down to the real bottom shelf, you'll have a kid like this one that texted me that will leave with an attitude. And then you'll see that kid at a Starbucks or at the mall or at Walmart. What do you do? But Stancil, come up here for a minute. All right, I am Joe, College and Career Director of Lancaster Baptist Church, and Brother Stancil is this kid that just texted me. He's broken his parents' heart. He's gone out, he's partied, he's alcoholed, he's drugged, he's working at Verizon in the mall. And I'm walking through the mall. Now, he doesn't hardly want to look at me. If he sees me, he'll look the other way or walk the other way or go the other way. All right? Now, that makes me feel bad, to be honest with you. I hate that. I don't like it that he's mad at me or that he thinks I don't like him. There's just this natural, I don't believe what you believe, so you probably don't like me anymore. Okay? All right? Here's what you do. Hey, Brent, how you doing, man? How you doing?
Good.
You doing okay?
Yeah.
How's life?
All right.
Man, is there anything I can do for you?
Doing all right.
All right. Cool, man. I love you. I'm praying for you. If you ever need anything, you call me. Come see me.
Okay.
How's Verizon working out?
Great.
Are you commission or are you hourly or both?
Commission.
Commission, is it, what person? And you know what? If I don't already have AT&T, if I have to go to Verizon, I'm coming to you.
There you go. Yeah.
Do you have a break or something? You want to get a cup of coffee? Or?
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, do you guys see what I'm just throwing stuff out. But I would sit here and talk to the house. Are you in school? What are you doing? You know, what are you studying? What are you taking? Are you dating anybody? You know, okay, so he's partying. So he's living with somebody he's not married to. He already is convicted about all that. I don't have to preach it in. He knows that I'm against how he's living, but I can still see how he's doing and what are you studying and how's life and how's your job and your family doing okay and your parents. Man, I see your parents all the time. Now, he might not want to talk to me. He might avoid me, but I am going to do everything I can do to let this guy know that I love him. He knows I disagree with his life, but he has already got people telling him, yeah, those people at the church, they hate you. If you go back there, they'll scorn, they'll shun you, they'll gossip about you. And I might say to him, hey, listen, you know what? I don't know what God's doing in your life. This is about as spiritual as I get with him. I don't know what God's doing in your life, but I just want you to know I am always your friend. And if God ever brings you back or if you ever want to get together, man, I'm your friend. You can be seated. Sometimes we get all funky. You know, He upset me when he left, and I upset him, and now he's a scorner, you know.
Would you, in that case, would you go to their place, like where they live, and visit them, or like you say, if you bump into
early them? On, yeah. Yeah, I would try to, when he started missing, I'd go visit him, and I'd try to, but you know, we can't control people's decisions. And you could visit a kid 50 million times, and all you're going to do is make him madder and madder, you know. I mean, at some point I go, all right, there's people that are receptive that I need to go visit. Clark talked about me visiting him over and over again in his testimony this morning. Clark was he was responding. If Clark had been shutting me down, and just cold and harsh and heartless every time, I would have eventually said, all right, God, you know, you open that door, and until you do, I'm going to use my time to go through other open doors, you know. At some point in time, I recognize this door is closed. And then, yeah, when I run into them. And I see those, you'll run into them. Those are divine appointments. Those are opportunities for you to, sometimes when after that, I'll write that personal letter. In this case, I probably would have gotten in my car, pulled out my phone, and dictated Brent a letter. Hey, man, it's great to see you. I just want you to know I love you. I'm thankful for your friendship. Let me know if I can ever do anything for you. You know, if I've hurt you in any way, if you please don't hesitate to come. Whatever, you know, whatever the Lord puts on my heart. Sometimes I'll write the parents' letter. You know, the parents think you don't like that kid. Hey, dear brother so-and-so, Mrs. so-and-so, I ran into Brent at the mall the other day and just wanted to let you know, I gave him a big hug and told him I'm praying for him, I love him. If I can ever do anything for him or you, or if there's any way I can serve, let me know. That lets the parents know, oh, wow, we're not outcast. You know, there's so much the devil wants to use to break this down. Because that guy, I've had more than I can tell you in this session of those types of kids come back a year and two and three later and write me or text me this kind of thing, okay? They do wake up. And they really sometimes just can't get away from the fact that I know that I know those people love me at that church, and they come back. Next, be accessible for counseling and encouragement. At a time when the devil tries to distance them from good relationships, be available to them. Have an open door and an open heart towards any question. I'll never forget being in a Bible doctrines class in Bible college. And the teacher of that class, if you raised your hand and asked a question, literally would yell in anger at you. I mean, just, Brother so-and-so, could you explain this? And this was his response. Do you want to listen or are you going to argue with me? I mean, by the time he did that three times, nobody had any more questions. Don't be that way. You know, just because somebody has a question doesn't mean they're heretics. They are wrestling with assaults on their faith. And you don't have to have all the answers. You can help them find answers. You can recommend books to them. You can say, you know what, I don't know that there's an answer to that question until we get to heaven. But you know what? I don't have to have an answer to that question to still believe that God validates my faith. You know, so be available to their questions. Next, support them through tough decisions. And here's what I mean by this. Support them through tough decisions. Be an unbiased counselor. I know that we want them to serve God. I know we want a lot of our kids to go to Bible college. I want my kids to go. I would like nothing more than for all of my youth group graduates to end up in ministry. That's not reality. That's not even God's will or plan, okay? That's my agenda, and I've got to counsel people apart from my agenda. I can't have this preset. If you've got an agenda, they won't come to you for counsel. If they don't believe you will counsel them honestly, they will not come to you. Be unbiased. Many of our young people are not called to ministry. They need to be reminded that the will of God for them is just as vital as if they were. I mean, Justin, who is now serving in our youth ministry, is a sheriff's deputy and a fine man. And I don't doubt that eventually one day he'll be a deacon in this church if God keeps him here. He's doing the will of God just as much as Clark Graham on the mission field is, and he needs to know that I believe that. We tend to make a big deal about the kids that are called. And not on purpose, but just by virtue of the fact that we're making a big deal about the called kids, we're making a little deal about the not called kids. And so they feel like, well, they don't like me as much. And you have to counteract that. You have to fight that constantly. Finally, under number one, be sensitive to their unique needs and challenges. Be sensitive to their unique needs and challenges. We're going to talk about that in this next point. But this is a very distinct life stage. They are very different than 30-somethings, and they're very different than 15, 16-year-olds. Okay, number two, structure this ministry for their unique needs. And what I want to do now is just rush through this in about 5 minutes. I listed 10 things that are different about this age group from most other people groups in your church, okay? And how did we come up with this? When we set, and I would encourage you to do what I'm about to tell you. We got our 18 to 23-year-old, primarily non-Bible college students. We had them to our house. We fed them. This was on a Sunday night. We had a fellowship with them. And I sat them down and said, guys, we're going to start a new group, and it's for you. And I said, I need to know what your needs are and what you would tell me would work in helping you. From that meeting and from dozens and maybe hundreds of other counseling appointments and fellowship times, this is the list of stuff we came up with. This is the stuff they told me, okay? Number one, because of classes and work, they don't have a lot of extra time. Now, I want you to think about when you were in college. And if you worked, you got up, you went to class, 7:30, 8 o'clock, whatever. You were in class till lunchtime. You grabbed lunch, and if you had a job, you probably had to be at work by 1:30 or 2. And you probably, if you were working 30 or 40 hours, you were at work till 9 or 10 o'clock. You're home, you're studying, you're back in bed. Okay? Okay, what does this mean? That this means for this age group, if you schedule a Friday night bowling activity and you have 20 people in this group, two are going to come. And you're going to be frustrated. Oh, these unspiritual Christian kids, you know, they don't ever come. No, it's not that they don't want to. I mean, they just told me, Brother Schmidt, don't treat us like we're high schoolers because we can't come to activities. We work Saturdays. Do you guys want to go to Disneyland? No. Really? You don't want to go, like the senior high school, we don't want to go to Disneyland. Why not? We don't have time. And if we did, we don't have money. Just the gas to get to Disneyland is as much as a park ticket. We can't afford it. Okay? Now, if I took our 23 to 30-year-old or our 30 to 40-year-old, if I went into that group on Sunday and said, hey, we're going to Disneyland, most of them would come. They're 30 years old. They don't have morning classes. They've got jobs. They've got savings. They've got enough money. They're only supporting themselves. They could buy a Disneyland pass, the best of them, you know. So they don't have a lot of extra time. They work second shift. They're not able to attend weeknight activities. It doesn't mean they don't need fellowship. It means they need Sunday night after church fellowship. I said to them, when can you have an activity? And we went around the room, and to every one of them, it was Sunday nights after church are the best time. We're not working on Sundays. We're already here at church, and there's time in the evenings. Let's get together Sunday nights. Number two, because of minimum wage jobs and bills, they don't have extra money. This means the activities need to be free. And they need to be in the forms of, like, fellowships and game nights. We tried to go to Dodgers games and have, you know, this, we're going here, we're going there, and nobody would come. And then we just have a Sunday night after church thing at my house, and everybody would come. And that just kind of showed us. They don't have a lot of money. They can't spend a lot of money. Number three, because of constant peer pressure, they need to be reassured. Their classes, their jobs, their people group, secular world, constantly attacking them. They need to sit in a group and hear each other's testimonies. And they need to hear other people talk about how they're dealing with challenges of their faith and how they're turning down sexual propositions and on we could go. They need constant reassurance that they're on the right track and they're doing the right thing. Do you remember when you were in college by about your second year, how you felt like you were spinning your wheels, going nowhere, and you wanted to quit? Every one of these kids at 20 starts to second guess their whole life direction because they're bogged down, okay? I gotta hurry. Don't you think we could sit here for two more hours and talk about this? Because their schedules, they can be hard to track down. You go try to visit them on Saturday mornings, you're not gonna find them home. Get connected to them. Facebook, Twitter, cell phones, text messages. Find out where they work. Go visit them at their workplace. They can be hard to track down. Number five, because their culture, they are non-committal. If we have a retreat for this age group, we could promote it 18 years in advance and they all sign up the night before. They won't commit. You guys have that with your singles thing? All the registrations come in the 2 days before. You know, it's like they're holding out in case something better comes up. And then the day before they're like, well, I don't got anything better to do. Yeah, I'll go. You know. Boom, 80, you know, 80, you know, 20 people sign up early, 80 sign up the last minute. They're non-committal. They're easily discouraged. That's also number five, which means they reconsider their good decisions. And number six, because their values are constantly hammered, they have a lot of questions and doubts and struggles. They need to be taught on basic values and biblical principles. Number seven, because of instant gratification in the world, they struggle with patience. And they fail to see that God's best is worth waiting for. They need to be taught, you know, be not weary in well-doing. They don't have patience. They're impatient. Number eight, because they see themselves as one small speck in a mass of humanity, they need vision for their lives. Help them see how significant they are in God's plan. Number nine, because they're tired of being viewed as children, they can often overreact to what they perceive as overbearing authority. They can often overreact to overbearing authority. Sometimes parents, even at 22 and 23, the parents are overbearing, trying to control every decision. Encourage them to get counsel, not because you want to control their life, but because wise people get good advice. Okay. Number 10, because they long for relationships and they are highly technical, they look to be accepted and connected in every way possible. That's why I say there's one main reason I do social networking, and that is because of this people group. So if you think Facebook is wicked, get over it and get on Facebook and get in their world, okay? All right, we got to be done. We have a retreat for these age groups. I'm going to say this last and we'll go. College and Career Retreat, 18 to 23, we do in January every year. Why do we do that? A lot of our Bible college, our church kids that are in Bible college go to summer internships. And during the semester break ends up being a good time where all of our kids, secular college and Bible college, can go on this retreat. We do not open this department to out-of-town college students, just our church kids. The single retreats we have in the summer. Single one has their own retreat. Single two, single life two has their own retreat. You got to hurry to the next session. Thank you for staying and for being a part of this. Lord, we pray that you'd bless the rest of our day. Thank you for it in Jesus' name. Amen. I'll be happy to stand out here if you have questions you want to talk about. We can do that out here.